So let's start out here by me inviting you to join me right now in a live seminar. Will you hear me talking about this story of how things changed for me? And instead of saying, oh yeah, isn't that wonderful, hopefully you can start to say, okay, what do I really want? And how can I create the kind of abundance I want at whatever level that is for me? It's not about stock. It's not about money. It's not even about how many people you can help or feed. It's about what's the standard that you really want for your life. And what I'm trying to get across to you, I guess, is I'm just a guy. But I've had the privilege of doing very well in this area of my life because I finally decided it was ridiculous for me not to be abundant financially when I was being abundant emotionally and spiritually and physically. So I want you to listen in. Let's get started. I was talking to my staff earlier today, and I was telling myself I really need to get across to people that this is real, that this really works. And so part of that is they, you know, I take for granted, I don't want to waste somebody's time telling them what I've gone through, but I thought maybe I should give you some sense of it, because the story of what I've gone through a little bit will reflect some of your stories, but also will show you the change in psychology, because I'm in a position where I don't have to worry about this anymore, but I only changed that not because the mechanics weren't available to me, they're available to anybody. But they became not only available, but used when it was a must, when I changed my model of the world, when I made it okay. So I grew up in a position where I know exactly what it feels like to walk into a restaurant and, like Denny's, if you can call that a restaurant, right? That was my idea of a restaurant. And go in there and freak out and look at the menu and see how much something cost before I ordered it. You know, and worry. And if you took a girl out praying she wouldn't order something expensive. And then feeling rotten for not wanting her to have what you wanted her to have, which is anything she wanted. Now, I can remember going, you know, even after I made some money, like when I bought the castle, that was like this big metaphor for me of breaking through, that I was gonna buy this because I always was so spiritually driven and emotionally driven, but I never really did well financially. So for me, buying this castle, I thought, this is where I want my children to grow up someday. This is like me driving the stakes in the ground. I'm going to show myself that I can take the invisible and make it visible. So it became my like last stand kind of thing. I'm going to find a way, and I found a way. And I'll tell you what, part of what made it a must and part of what changed me from making $38,000 a year to making $1 million a year within 1 year was having a son that I wasn't planning coming into this world. So I grew up with so much pain. I linked so much pain to finances and not having it. I always swore I would not have a child until I was set financially because I didn't want them to go through that. I didn't want them to go through hearing father after father leave and your mother say things to them that you wouldn't want to ever have said to you, in a sense of worthlessness, in a sense of frustration and fear and humiliation. I didn't want a son or daughter to be born to me and to go to school and have pants that were way too high because they grew too fast and your family couldn't afford to buy pants. And have kids say things that are just silly but feel so cruel when you're a little kid. High water becomes your nickname. You know, and you're embarrassed and humiliated and devastated, and you feel it's so unfair. And you see, other kids can go and do all these things, and you can't. They make fun of you for it, and you didn't do anything. And then you don't want to be mad at your family. It's not your family's fault. Or being in a position where you got to go to the thrift store to buy a suit so you can take a girl to a dance, and the suit is about 30 years old, out of style. Not having enough money to take the person to dinner, so you make excuses not to take the girl to dinner. Getting older and being on your own and trying to figure out how to eat because you had no money at all. And going into a grocery store and eating food in the grocery store as I walked around, stealing it basically. Not basically, that's what it was stealing. I just didn't take it out of the store, I took it out of the store inside me. Somehow I rationalized that wasn't stealing. I left the package in the store. And I kid about it now. I mean, I used to just cry. Values conflict, sir? How do you think I felt? Honestly, being one of my highest values, and I'm stealing to survive. I'm eating somebody's food in the store, walking around, also freaked out I'm going to get caught. I remember more than once when somebody come by, and I knew people in the store because I grew up. I used to go in these stores. I used to shop every day for my family. My mom never went to the grocery store. I shopped every day for our meals and came home and made them. A lot of people I knew, I got something in my mouth. Hi, Tony. It's freaking inside. Just freaking inside. Not having any money for a car, working as a janitor, taking buses for 2 hours to get there so I could work for 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the night, jump back on the buses, go home, and go to high school. living in somebody's laundry room, finally getting a car and having that car be an old Volkswagen, 1960 Volkswagen, with no reverse. So I had to park on a hill. I always parked on a hill so I could get back out. Remember, you know, being in a position where I was really in love with a lady and watching another man come pick her up in a limousine and knowing she wanted the finer things in life. I couldn't provide them, and I felt it was so unfair because I really loved her. And I felt like she loved me, but she also wanted significant life, certainty. Looking around at my life and just feeling hopeless and worthless. Living with a woman who I liked a lot but did not love, really wanted it out of the relationship with but stayed in it because she paid half the rent. Convincing myself I should stay with her for security, for $400 a month split between us. Giving up my dignity for $200. It's true. Thinking about what I dreamed I would do with my life and knowing it would never happen because I didn't have the resources, I thought. Being in the position where I saw other people having the kind of life that I really wanted and just thinking life was unfair and feeling hurt and sad and having one of those things after another, after another, after another. Finally getting so determined, finally deciding that it was nobody else's fault, it was mine. Finally deciding this would change absolutely now, no matter what. Finally looking at an empty chair, knowing I could not pay my rent, knowing I couldn't answer my phone because I owed everybody money in town, every kind of bill collector, knowing my electricity is about to be turned off, and hearing this song by Neil Diamond saying, "I am, I said, and no one heard, not even the chair," and looking at an empty chair and thinking that is so true. That I wasn't even supporting myself, much less changing the world, much less doing what I was put here for. That I was so busy trying to survive that I wasn't doing anything to make the world better. And I got hungry. Not for food, for meaning. I got hungry enough that I stopped blaming everybody else and I decided this was going to change. It was going to change right now no matter what. And I went for a run on the beach. And I gained 38 pounds because I didn't want to make it that it was that bad. It wasn't that bad. I was still young. It wasn't my fault. It's my mother's fault. She threw me out. That's everybody else's fault. So I hated the way I felt. I hated the woman I was with. I hated my life. So the fastest way to change the way you feel is eat. Because I didn't want to do drugs because I link pain to that. So I gained my 38 pounds, but on that day, I'll tell you what, man, I decided I am much more than what I'm demonstrating mentally and emotionally and spiritually and physically and financially. And one day, I changed my life, and I went on this run, 38 pounds, bouncing back and forth, full tilt, man, with every ounce of myself, song in my ears from a group called Heart, called Barracuda, and I pushed myself as hard as I'd ever pushed myself in my entire life, total intensity. And I came back and wrote down everything in my life I would no longer settle for ever again. Selling for less than I believe in. Selling for a life of survival. Being in a relationship that I don't love. Being fat. Being broke. Hiding from people. Lying. That is not who I am. And I wrote down everything in my life I was totally committed to. So I wasn't just going to solve a problem. That was sickening enough. I was going to create the life that I knew was here. Somewhere inside yourself, knowing you deserve more, so do your children, so do the people around you. Life deserves to see more of you show up. And not lying to yourself and saying it's okay. Not saying it's a terrible feeling or it sucks. Saying what it really is. It's disgusting. It's vulgar. It's humiliating. It's horrible. Because it's with that, when you get that kind of truth with yourself, you'll find the drive to change anything. Because then it'll be a total must. When it's a must, you'll find a million ways to do it. And when you find a million ways and you start doing a few, pretty soon you're proud of yourself and you got momentum. And I did. I remember thinking, my God, if I could ever make $2,000 in a month. And then I did it. And I was like, God, if you could make $5,000 in a month. I mean, $60,000 in a year. And then it was like, wow. $10,000. And then I made $10,000 in a day, and I was 19 years old. I was like, yes. I'm going to have pants long enough No worries. I'm going to drive a decent car. I'm going to have a life that I want. I can give to my church. I can do this. I can do that. Then I went back to see my friends, all these people I loved. I was so excited. I want to share with them. I said, let's do things. Let's fly to Egypt and let's race camels between the pyramids. They said, what's the matter with you? You're just into money? I said, no, I'm just not into poverty anymore. No? Huh? I said, I've worked really hard. I've added massive value. I've done this and this and this. I've helped people's lives this way and that way, and I actually got paid for it. I actually do what I love, and because I do what I love so well, I can actually go out and do these other things too and have a great life. But what I got was, I thought if I had money growing up, I saw that not having money meant pain, no love, arguments with my parents, all this loss, all this separation, not being one of the cool kids, not even having a bicycle till an uncle goes and finds an old one and shines it up and paints it for me and makes it and gives me my first bicycle. And he didn't have a whole lot of money, but he had an unbelievable heart. So when you link that, man, not having it is why everybody hates each other, they leave each other, and they don't love each other. Then you start saying, yeah, I'd like to have some. And so then you do, and then people reject you. Now your brain is really scrambled. You do good things. You make a difference in the world. You cannot earn without adding value. Let me tell you something. The only way to become wealthy is to add more value to other people's lives than anybody else is adding. It is the only way. If you don't add value, you will not sustain the wealth. You will not maintain it. Your income is in direct proportion to your contribution, period. And you're going to make yourself wrong for that? I guess you want to limit your contribution. But we forget that because, boy, love is one of those deep human emotional needs, isn't it? So now I have a money equal pain, so I got rid of it. I started not showing up for key meetings, started treating people harshly, started sabotaging every way possible because my brain went, you better get rid of this money because no one's going to love you. So I did. And my Aussie friends have a term for it in their country. What's it called, guys? That's right, the tall poppy syndrome. You get a little too significant, we'll cut you down to size real quick. All people's fears, because other people not want to be honest with themselves and say, I could be more. And one of those areas is the way I contribute, and one of those areas is economic. But I don't want to look at that because it'll make me feel inferior, so I'll just do what feels good. I'll go drug myself, drink myself, watch myself, live myself, anything else. It's not everybody's focus. It doesn't need to be, but most people are not even close to where they really want to be. They mitigate their real wants. They lower their standard in order to feel comfortable wherever they are. They don't look at what they really want for their lives. And they come up with every excuse and reason to make it feel justified and holier than thou. So I sabotaged it all and found myself in a 400 square foot bachelor apartment and broke all over again. And I learned I love people. If you help people, they still like you, but don't make any money at it. So I didn't. For years, broke, terrible. But finally, a few things happened that just got me inside, and I realized I was playing a game. I was doing this to get people's love. I was lowering my standards for how I wanted to live life and what I wanted to contribute to life to try and get people around me to approve. And there was a time when I got mad as hell, and I said, next level, and I kicked it in gear. And then what really pushed me over the edge, though, was making it a must with the leverage of my son. I got myself up to $38,000 a year. And guess what? I'd had all this pain, and I was doing okay. It wasn't great. So what happened? When it was really intense pain, I had this drive. As soon as I got near $40,000 a year, gosh, I was only 23. So bottom line is I went out there and did it. My son comes along, wham, $1 million. Then guess what? I stayed at $1 million for the next 5 years. And by the way, I found a way to spend $1 million. I went from making $38,000 a year, living in a 400-square-foot bachelor apartment, and I made a huge move, man. I grabbed hold of my psychology and I went for it. I had a choice to move from Venice to Marina del Rey. It's across one street if you've ever lived there. But it's a totally different identity. Anybody know what I'm talking about here? Two psychologies and divided by one street. And there's a big difference in what you pay to be an achiever, isn't there? You got to pay for significance. And I was living in Marina del Rey. And I'm building a business. Yep. Robbins Research Institute. I sat there in this little room and said, I got to create a name for this company. I got to make a company that sounds really big, right? So an institute, that sounds big. And what am I going to do? I'm going to research everything that works. Robbins Research Institute. So I had a little room, right? It wasn't big enough to have an office and have a bed. So I thought, which one will get me further? So I took the office. I had this desk, and I had Robbins Research Institute. It was an answer phone, right? And I had one stereo to help change my state because I was kind of depressed at times because I didn't really feel like I was quite pulling it off 100%. And I had an 8-track player. Remember those? And you go, well, where'd you sleep? I hung from one end of the room in the corner to the other a hammock, and where I put it was a futon, so it was solid, and that was my bed, so I could go under it and do my work and build my company. That's how I started. I moved from there to the castle. I moved from $625 a month to $16,000 a month, 1 month. I went down, I was building my business, and I got some partners, and I lived in San Diego, and I said, I can't build this by myself, I need your help. I said, I'm the best communicator you're ever going to find. I'm humble about it. I said, I am. I will in my lifetime touch more people than any human being you're going to meet in terms of actually helping them to change the quality of life. It is my destiny, and I will do it. And there will be plenty of money, but I'm happy to split it with you. I need people to do the resources. I'm on a mission. I need somebody to handle the finances. I need somebody who's happy to do that. That's what they do. They said, done deal. We went to your program. You're unbelievable. And my momentum was growing in the culture. So then I made $1 million a year, but I never saw it. The person had a great lifestyle was my mage. Oh, Mr. Robbins, I love your jacuzzi. This is great. Love your workout room. I was never there. It wasn't like I was out spending millions of dollars. I was gone. But it cost $1 million just to have that. And I stayed there for 5 years. And after 5 years, I thought, I'm working harder than I ever have. I'm helping more people than I've ever helped. I'm better than I've ever been. Everybody else is making more money at my company. I'm not earning a dime more. Why? Answer. Earning more than $1 million a year? What's the matter with you? What are you, greedy? Is there something? Aren't you spirit? Why would you have to have more than $1 million a year? And my brain went, is it possible to earn more than that? Is it possible to add more value? Now, this is a spiritual game about create whatever you want. And you went from 38,000 to $1 million a year. You should at least go from 1 to 3. I thought, but how did I do it? And that was the secret. I figured out what got me to make it a must. And what it was nothing more than something else I cared more about than myself. So I was my son. So what's that for me now? And I said, I'd like to be responsible for feeding every homeless person who needs a meal in all of North County of San Diego. There's a man named Brother Benno, an amazing, amazing man there. And I went and met him, and I thought, I want to be able to pay for a quarter of that so that when I eat every night, I know that every soul in this county of this city can eat because of my good works. I set that goal, and I figured out what it would take. I figured out to earn $3 million, be able to afford to do that, and still have more for my family. And I made $3 million the next year. But I stayed that way for about 4.5, 5 years. And then a few years ago, I started thinking about what I really want my destiny about, what I want to contribute to the world and to society, and I figured out a really crystal clear vision that I have now. I know exactly what I'll do over the next 16 years of my life. After that, things will change, but I know precisely what I'm going to do and where I'm going to go. I know what it takes. So now I make between $7 and $10 million a year, personally, of which, by the way, 10% of it comes from seminars. This whole company, all that I do here, and yet this is 80% of my time. Not a brilliant decision financially, but an unbelievably rewarding decision emotionally. Right? Thank you very much.